Good evening. I'm opening my Bible to Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 9. Would you be doing the same, please? Deuteronomy chapter 18 and verse 9. And the clicker should be up here somewhere. There we go. What exactly is the occult? Satanism is the third fastest growing religion in the United States, if you include all different branches and aspects of it, including things often referred to as the New Age movement. I hear that statistic and I just marvel at how many people are wrapped up in certain aspects of the occult. Anybody that's familiar with Shakespeare knows that in one of his classic plays, he talked about double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, an obvious reference to the witch's brew of 17th century England. The idea of the occult is basically looking for things that are special knowledge, things that are hidden. In some ways, it has a little bit of a similarity to Gnosticism, because the idea of the Gnostics is they had some special knowledge that made them elite and were somehow or other better and different than other people who didn't share this particular hidden knowledge. It's been defined this way. It is the secret doctrine and mysterious practice involving the action or influence of supernatural agencies or some secret knowledge of them which transcend the natural senses to seek their influence in our present or future lives or in the lives of others. And there has been literally a occult explosion in the last 20 years, especially. I was amazed to find the following, that the Satanic Bible outsells the Holy Bible 2-1 in many college towns. Right now, you can look up on the internet and you'll find there are 10,000 astrologers who list themselves as making a living by giving people their astrological forecast. 40 million people consult their horoscopes daily. And the Satanic Church has somewhere between 8 and 10,000 members, and that is domiciled in San Francisco. We need to understand really what this is and how to deal with it, particularly as it is creeping more and more into our popular culture. I was surprised to find when I went about really studying this that the Bible says a lot about different aspects of the occult. There are over 200 passages that deal with the devil and the occult and devil worship in some form. And there's a specific passage in the Bible, in Deuteronomy chapter 18, that deals with all nine aspects of occult worship, which I believe all Christians need to familiarize themselves with. The Bible says that the devil is a subtle and crafty creature, the most subtle creature that has ever been created. But the good news is he's not very creative. He has not really come up with anything new to speak of in 3,400 years. And all of these different aspects of the occult and the New Age movement, they can all be identified right back here in the book of Deuteronomy as specific things that God condemns. Now, in some cases, they do the same thing, but they call it something different. They've kind of wrapped something up that's evil and kind of put it in white sheep's clothing and made it appear innocent, and therefore it's become very popular. But remember, the Bible says in 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11 that we are not to be ignorant of Satan's devices. And so it is my desire for us to look at this text and familiarize yourself with it if you are not already familiar. And then talk about some modern-day applications as to how we can deal and understand with the spiritual warfare that's going on all around us. All right, let's go ahead and read this section here of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. And thou art come into the land, when thou come into the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations that you're about to cast out. He's referring to the seven Canaanite nations that they were supposed to go in and drive out of the land because of their wickedness. He says, there shall not be found with thee any one that maketh his son or daughter to pass through the fire, one that uses divination, one that practices augury, or an enchanter, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirit, or a wizard, or a necromancer. Now, if you have a different translation, they may have translated some of those words differently. I'm reading to you from the American Standard. And so he says that this is so bad that I want you to go in and wipe out these cultures that have given themselves over to these kind of practices and have absolutely nothing to do with them. By way of introduction, I'd like to talk for a minute about maybe a few other ways that we can see the expansion of the occult, and then I want us to deal with some biblical assumptions. There are over 20,000, they call them Santero priests, in Miami and New York. 9,000 official registered witches in England. And I read recently that Wiccan, which is a kind of spin-off of a certain kind of nature worship and all that kind of thing, is actually officially accepted as a religion, and in some cases the military provides Wiccan chaplains. There are 60,000 occultists that earn $200 million a year in France alone, and here in the United States there are hundreds of 900 psychic lines pulling in about $500 million a year. So otherwise relatively intelligent people are so desperate for answers that they are seeking for light in darkness. And a lot of this is happening right underneath our nose. Some of the assumptions we need to begin with as Bible believers, as we have a worldview based upon Jehovah God and the scriptures, is that the Bible does assume the reality of the occult. I remember years ago, I was giving a college lecture on this subject, and after I was done, several students approached me and they were just shocked. They said, are you trying to say that evil spirits are real? I said, absolutely. They said, I thought all the angels that were evil were cast down and that they are now held in pits of darkness and chains and that they are no threat to our soul or to our well-being today. And I simply referred to Ephesians 6 and verse 12, where it talks about put on the whole armor of God. Why? That we might withstand the wiles of the devil. Then it goes on and says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against what? He's talking about modern day spiritual warfare. He says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and might and the world rulers of darkness in the heavenly places. Wow. Do I understand all the implications of that? No. But do I believe that? And that's what you and I have to wake up and deal with as we find this constant battle is going on in this world around us between good and evil? Absolutely. And yes, definitely, these principalities and powers and mights and the power of the satanic realm in the occult is certainly real and something we have to deal with on a daily basis. Psalmistry, tea leaf reading, witches, goblins, Satanists, demons. Most people think those are just sort of innocent playthings, maybe costumes you wear on Halloween, human superstitions. Well, some of those are and some of them aren't. A lot of times at Halloween, people will have fun dressing up as different mythical characters. I remember I used to enjoy answering the door on Halloween and saying hello to the kids and giving them candy and looking at the costumes that they would wear. It was very common for the kids to come to the door dressed as Mickey Mouse or Tinkerbell. And of course, those are just obviously made up fanciful characters. And frequently, I think maybe because sometimes they were too lazy to find a real outfit, they just put a sheet over their head and make two holes in it for eyes and say, I'm a ghost. Are ghosts real? Well, certainly departed spirits are real, but Luke 16 tells us that when Lazarus died, that the angels came down and escorted his spirit up into Abraham's bosom in paradise. I don't see any indication that the angels fail at that job and that you have ghosts running around haunting grave sites or haunting houses. I don't understand the idea of Casper the Friendly Ghost on the one hand and then all of these scary ghosts on the other. I mean, I don't believe that ghosts, in the way that our society often talks about them, are real at all, though we certainly believe that the spirit separates from the body and ultimately goes back to God who made it. So, you know, ghosts are just sort of made-up playthings. But I remember somebody coming to the door years ago, and this girl had a bright red outfit on, and she was the devil. She had horns and a tail and a pitchfork, and then next to her, somebody else had a big black hat and a broom, and she was a witch. And, you know, I kind of engaged in a discussion with them, and I said, well, those are interesting costumes. And they said, yeah, you know, they're just sort of fun, just sort of make-believe. And I said, well, you know, the devil is real. He's not just a costume. He's not the same as Tinkerbell or the Karate Kid or something. And so you need to recognize that that's not just some sort of personification of evil or something made up. And frankly, there's some serious dangers in practicing witchcraft also. And so we got involved in kind of an interesting conversation. They were teenagers. And I gave them the candy and we left. But I got to thinking about that. How many Christians really understand or recognize the difference between some of these things that truly are fanciful and just sort of made up, kind of Harry Potter type of things, versus things that are part of the spiritual warfare that we need to deal with and to take seriously? The Bible assumes the reality of the occult. And we tend not to talk about this very much, but I think we should, because I think this is important for us to grasp what is real and what is not, and what we have to face as we deal with these types of things. Everybody in the media is talking about 50 Shades of Grey, and don't worry, I did not see the movie. I have no intention, after reading what it's about, of seeing it. We don't see R-rated movies, but it's interesting. Everybody's talking about 50 Shades of Grey. There are some areas about which there is some gray, but this is not one of them. Anybody who's involved in anything that is specifically mentioned in these nine aspects of occult activities are involved in things that are satanic, and any aspect of occultism is satanic. And they're evil, and they're dark, and they ought not to be toyed with or played with as if they are innocent things. I remember as a kid, I don't remember where we got it, we used to play with a Ouija board. Anybody other than me played as a kid with a Ouija board? You know, people act like, oh, it's kind of innocent fun. I don't think so. I think as we look at what these things do and how many people who get involved in this and ultimately proclaim themselves as practicing these things and being involved in witchcraft, about 80% of them report they started with Ouija boards. And I think part of what happens is we're just not aware of what the Bible says about these things, and we need to be aware, because the Bible specifically prohibits any kind of involvement in the occult. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 18, there's something known as this kind of a truth or consequences thing, where he tells them that whoever does these things, he's referring back to this list of nine things that I just gave you, is detestable to the Lord. Now, most of the time, the Bible condemns the practice and not the person who participates in the sin. In this case, whoever does this is detestable. That is really strong. And because of these detestable things, the Lord God will drive them out before you. In the context, he says, I told you to drive out these nations and to totally destroy them, in part because they were all wrapped up in these occult practices. And if you go back in there, supposedly as my holy people, and you start engaging in these things, then I'm going to wind up vomiting you out of the land just like I vomited out the Canaanites before you. And we're going to find, as you look at the history of Judah in particular, that there was a fellow by the name of Manasseh who participated in occult worship. That's how low the nation got. And as a result, God said that that's it. I'm going to bring the nation into captivity. I told you this would happen if you did this, and I'm going to keep my word. So they broke the covenant in part because of their occult activities. Notice what it says in Leviticus 20. A man or woman who calls upon spirits or fortune tellers or magicians shall be put to death by stoning. Wow. Their blood is upon them. Anyone who turns to mediums and fortune tellers or magicians prostitutes himself by following them, I will set my face against them and will cut him off from the people. The reason why this is discussed in the Bible as an abomination before God is that this whole idea goes back to the practice of sorcery and the idea that you can somehow or other manipulate God by saying the magic words or doing something that somehow or other is going to force some sort of God, small g, to do your will and to do your bidding. And to treat Jehovah God in that way is the ultimate insult. How dare you think that you can be involved in these witches' brews or whatever these things are, and as a result, you can somehow or other force me to do your bidding. And so he says you prostitute yourself when you do that. And it is a capital crime to be involved in these type of things. In fact, occult practices, as I just mentioned, were one of the reasons listed in 2 Kings 17 and verses 16 through 18 as one of the reasons why God took the nation into captivity. So it's a very serious thing. I do want to mention, however, that it's not all dark in that as bad as these things are, they are not unforgivable sins. Even Manasseh, at the end of his life, he was taken into captivity and into prison, and he repented. And apparently, though he had done awful things during his very long reign, he cleaned his act up. It was kind of too little too late for the nation, but individually he did receive forgiveness for his long list of sins, one of which being occult worship. So let's look at this verse here when it talks about reasons why the nation fell into captivity. They worshiped all the host of heaven, the idea of worshiping the zodiac and the sun, moon, and the stars, and they served Baal, idolatry. And they made their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire. In other words, they offered their children up as infant sacrifices, another satanic practice. And they practiced divination and enchantments, all specific things that are condemned by Moses, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him. Now, notice the list of occult practices that are given as to why God brought first Assyria and then later Babylon in to destroy the nation. Well, what is really the motivation behind the occult? Why would people want to look for light in darkness? Well, part of it has to do with this idea, again, of secret knowledge. In fact, they oftentimes have secret ways of communicating among themselves. The idea of backward masking, where you put in messages that you can only hear in music, for example, when you play the thing backwards, is considered an occult practice. It has to do with this idea of kind of secret special knowledge. And we talk about somebody looking into, you know, one of these crystal balls And we talk about, well, I don't have a crystal ball kind of thing, as if that would do you any good if you did. Listen, only God can foretell the future. And anybody who claims that they can foretell the future is involved in blasphemy against Jehovah. And the reason why fulfilled prophecy is such an important part of our faith and in the Bible is because it's solid evidence that God is behind this, because he consistently foretells the future, not 80 or 90% accuracy, but with 100% accuracy. Somebody asked me this morning, how can we believe in God when we can't see him? Well, there's a lot of answers to that, but one of them is because we have all these very clear examples of detailed, fulfilled, specific prophecies that lets us know that we are serving a God who is outside the material universe in which we are of which we are currently prisoners. And they seek to gain some hidden power in some way. And I do believe that because Satan and the principalities and the powers and mights are still alive and well on the planet Earth, and the Bible says he's seeking whom he may devour every day that we live, we're not going to be away from that until one day there's a gulf fixed between heaven and hell. And that's one of the things that will make heaven heaven, is we won't have to deal with this anymore. But people that are not godly and are not seeking the true blessings that come from the true God, they often seek to gain some sort of power by tapping into satanic influences and satanic power. And I do believe, though I don't believe in demon possession and that kind of thing in the way that you see in the New Testament era, I do believe that there are ways that Satan is acting today in the planet Earth, and that people who give themselves over to him and to these occult practices, they are involved in something that does have some power attached to it, not the same power that God does. I think some are just complete fakers. Personally believe that some are not. And any attempt to contact the dead, something known as necromancy, is an occult practice as well. And it's amazing to me how several things have happened lately in the media and in television to popularize this. You may be familiar with the very popular show Crossing Over, where John Edwards purported to communicate with dead people. And that is no longer on the air, but TLC has reviewed their very popular psychic reality show called Long Island Medium. Now is going to be available for a second season. It has about 1.3 million viewers. And there is a 2-year waiting list for this woman who claims that she can connect clients with the spirits of deceased relatives. And it's seen as just all kind of, you know, popular new age mumbo jumbo. This is one of the things that is involved in occult type of activities. And we shouldn't have anything to do with this. And the fact that this is becoming more and more, you know, popular, people purporting that they do this, is sadly a sign of the times. Let's look at this again. When you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not learn to imitate the detestable things of those nations. It's one of the reasons why he wanted to wipe them all out. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes a son or daughter pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, one who casts a spell, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead, or at least attempts to do so. This is a picture of Molech and the worship of Molech. It's mentioned numerous times throughout the Bible. Molech and Chemosh were the gods of the Moabites and the Ammonites, and it was a part of a common Canaanite practice where you would actually heat up the arms of this idol, and you would put this newborn infant on the hot, heated arms of this idol, and then it would fall down into the pit of fire below. Typically, they would have people, as you can see here, you know, bowing down. This is like this ultimate sacrifice to your God, and they would be beating the drums, driving away the sound of the screaming mothers. What an awful thing to do. I don't understand the appeal of this at all. But passing through the fire is a common reference in the Bible, and it has to do with infant sacrifices. And he says, if you get involved in this kind of thing, then I'm just not going to tolerate it. You're going to be wiped out as well. The Israelites later practiced this very thing in the Valley of Hinnom, according to 2 Kings 23 and verse 10. Josiah defiled the Tophel so that no one may let their son or daughter pass through the fire to Molech anymore. It was a part of his reformations as a part of this Old Testament restoration when he was turning the people back to God. And the child sacrifice of Satanism is not new. It has been around for centuries. Let me say just as a sideline that it's real easy for us to grimace at the abominations of past cultures or other nations and to be completely blinded to what's happening right in our own backyard. Since January 23rd, 1973, when it has become legal in the United States to go ahead and practice abortion, and in some cases even subsidized by the government now, 55 million babies, they estimate, have been prematurely aborted. The large majority of those simply for people's convenience. I fear that God looks down at that and sees that as child sacrifice on a grand scale. And killing these unborn children in a very painful way oftentimes, very similar to this whole practice here of passing children through the fire. And that's the kind of thing that God is particularly upset about. All right, one of the aspects of the occult practice has to do with attaining knowledge. Divination means to speak a message revealed to one's mind by the gods. This primarily has to do with the idea of going into some sort of trance, and then as a result of this trance, someone sort of speaks a message through you. You can go on the internet and you can find that there's two volumes, about 500 pages each. It's a lot of stuff called Seth Speaks. And it purportedly is written by this spirit, Seth, that just supposedly takes over this woman's hands and she just writes as the spirit moves her, as the saying goes, that died 150 years ago. And so she is just claiming that she is this channel through which this spirit, Seth writes, that she has some sort of access to. Kind of bizarre, but it is out there. And in Acts chapter 16:16-19, we are told that there is a woman there, and the people are using her for profit. She is this woman who has the spirit of divination. She is possessed by demons. This apparently was sort of one of the satanic gifts that people that were possessed by demons had. We talk about spiritual gifts to those who are committed to God and in the New Testament who had the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. But here we've got some sort of special power that this woman was demonstrating because she was possessed by a demon. Then when Paul came along and cast this demon out, she lost her power and her inability to do whatever she was doing, and they lost their means of livelihood, and they're mad about it. The point is, there was something that was happening here, and it was because they were literally involved in this part of occult worship. There's also things that are defined here in the American Standard as an observer of times or the practice of witchcraft, or the American Standard Version says augury. Augury is, again, one of those things that is just sort of grotesque to even explain to you what it was. It has to do with the splitting the living animal open and looking in and seeing how the organs and the intestines and that kind of thing kind of move around and what position they are in when they kind of stop slithering. I don't know any other better way to explain it than that. It's kind of gross, isn't it? Satanists sometimes do that very same thing with babies in a ritual on October 31st. And of course, on the satanic calendar, which Satanists take very seriously, their second most holy day is Halloween, October 31st. And the first most holy day is the Satanist's own birthday, because they believe that they are the center of everything and they are the most important person. It's a basis of selfishness versus selflessness, which Christianity is based upon. I want to tell you about an upcoming little mini-series that I haven't seen it, but it looks like it may be very worthwhile. It's called Dove Keeper. And it's a mini-series on CBS, March 31st and April 1st, which has to do with the Roman invasion of Palestine and the ultimate destruction of Jerusalem, and how a bunch of Jews and some women held up in a fortress known as Masada. And it's a fascinating, you know, miniseries based upon a true story. And one of the things that history tells us that the Romans did, not knowing for sure how to handle this advance or what to do, is they practiced augury. These pagans killed this animal, looked into the liver of the animal to determine what they should do next. My guess is that that will be featured in The Dove Keeper if you get a chance to see it. There's other places where this is mentioned, this supposed special means to foretell direction of the future. In Ezekiel 21 and verse 21, the king of Babylon comes to a fork in the road, doesn't know which way to go. And in this case, they took arrows and a quiver and shook the quiver until an arrow fell out. Whichever direction it pointed, that was the way they thought Nisroch, their god, was directing them to go. A clear reference again to the pagan practices of the Babylonians. All right, how about knowledge? What is there that they're trying to find about people's future? You probably recognize this little diagram. It has to do with psalmistry. And I'm sure you've heard about people who supposedly are experts in reading your palm and based on the lines in your palm, determining something about your life or your future. If you've ever been to downtown Seattle, you will see that there are lots of signs up in places where you can go and pay money for people to read your palm. It's amazing what people will spend their money on. There's also something known as phrenology, which has to do with somebody coming along and feeling the bumps on your head. And based on the bumps on your head, they foretell the future. And then there's numerology, which has to do with special secret things about you that can be discovered based upon a sequence of numbers that frequently comes from assigning numbers to the letters in your name. And you can go on the web and they talk about numerological secrets, hidden knowledge of the universe. Click here. And they've got all this information about trying to determine your future by numerology. And of course, we're familiar with the idea of reading tea leaves, right? That, again, is a part of our culture as well. It's amazing how many things are out there where people are desperate to determine their future. I like to tell people that we may not know what the future holds, but we do know who holds the future. And ultimately, we need to live trusting in God and not these type of occult practices. One thing that is becoming more and more popular is tarot card readings. Tarot cards are rather interesting. They actually began in Italy in the 15th century, and they had four suits, and then they had a fifth suit, which is where we get the idea of a trump or a trump card. It actually goes back to tarot cards. And then they had uses that were, I think, fairly innocent for most of their time. And then later on, they were picked up by occultists in the 18th and 19th century in France, and they began to use the fifth suit of different picture cards as ways to discern the future. And here is an example of one of the cards, one of the picture cards, the trump cards, with the symbol, of course, of the devil. This is to represent death. That's not one of those cards you want to draw when you're having your tarot card reading. Here's something that represents the fool. There's another one that deals with being a traitor. And used to be you had to go and pay somebody a lot of money to get this interpreted. Now you can buy one of these, and there's instructions about how to do it yourself for about 20 bucks. Again, don't waste your money. But these are the kind of things that are out there that you hear about just almost everywhere you turn, where they talk about these different ways that people try to foretell the future. There's also something that the Bible talks about in regards to enchanters, or those who interpret omens. And these have to do with prophecies from observing natural phenomenon. We're not talking here about the Groundhog Day, where you try to see if the groundhog sees its shadow and that determines whether winter's going to last 6 weeks more or not. That's just folklore. That kind of thing is innocent. But I am talking about people giving you what's known sort of as a bad omen, where you're told that if a white owl lands on your house before sunset, someone in that house will die. And if you were told that and you believe it and you're terrified by that, then that's what this particular aspect of interpreting omens is. Astrology is the most consistently condemned occult practice in the Bible, and yet it is more and more popular in our culture. Sometimes I tell people that I was born in December, so that means I'm a Sagittarian, which ultimately means absolutely nothing. Nothing. And I personally believe in what Shakespeare said when he says, "The fault is not in the stars, but in us." That we do not worship the stars or the movement of the stars or try to plan our lives based upon some sort of astrological forecast. We ought to be people that recognize that we are vested in and through Christ have a relationship with the Creator who made the stars themselves. And what a huge difference there is in that. And yet, I can remember again, people talking all the time about what's your astrological sign and, you know, making big deals about whether this would be a good match or not. And I was so disappointed. I remember Nancy Reagan actually went ahead and arranged the White House calendar based upon astrology. Hitler actually had a whole cadre of astrologers that supposedly helped direct him in World War II. How'd that work out for him? but at any rate, we're familiar with this. The point is, this is not the kind of thing we ought to toy with or mess with or have anything to do with, because this is all a part of the occult. And it was one of the reasons why Israel and Judah were destroyed. A witch or a sorcerer is somebody who practices black arts for power. I'm mindful of Bar-Jesus in Acts chapter 13, where he says to Bar-Jesus, remember Paul struck him blind, he says, "You that are full of guile and all villainy, son of the devil, enemy of righteousness, how long wilt thou pervert the righteous ways of the Lord?" This guy was a Jew. He should have known better than this. And yet here he was involved in this kind of practice. We're very familiar with Simon the sorcerer. I think you could probably, I don't think it's a necessary inference, but you know, why were these people so amazed at what Simon was doing? What did these people have that, you know, was causing him to have such a following? A lot of times, these sorcerers were into the use of drugs. And the root of the word pharmacy is the same root for the word sorcery, because they used to use drugs in connection with a lot of these occult activities. And when people, yes, John?
I wouldn't interrupt, but I think you might want to know this.
Okay.
A number of years ago, I baptized a fellow in Nevada who had made his living writing these astrological.
There's lots of them out there. There's lots of them out there that do that.
Well, this one was kind of interesting. In the process,
Yes, and I think oftentimes they are, at least in this context, using drugs in some sort of inappropriate manner. That seems to be what happens here with Simon the Sorcerer and with Bar Jesus. All right, let's talk for a minute about this idea of charmer. That's cast a person under a spell so they will lose their will. Do not confuse this with hypnotism. Hypnotism is a natural altered state of consciousness, and you don't lose your will when you're hypnotized. That's just something that Hollywood's come up with. But this is something where an individual somehow or other gives themselves over to the individual that is trying to cast some spell upon them. In the Hebrew, the literal word here has to do with mesmer, which is where we get the word mesmerize. And it pictures somebody playing a flute, for example, and then the cobra comes up as a snake that is sort of mesmerized by this person that has this ability to, you know, control the movement of this snake. And some sort of charming and all that kind of stuff, and spells is what's associated here with this type of activity. In the Bible, you ask blessings upon people. In Satanism, you actually put a hex upon people or a curse. And, you know, voodoo works if you believe in it. If you have a doll and somebody's sticking needles in it, and you see that and you believe that somehow or other there's some power in that, and you think this means you're going to die or you're going to have a heart attack, you very well might have a heart attack because you're so strongly believing that that exactly is the sort of thing that will happen. All right, let's also talk about occult practices in regards to spiritism and spiritualism, mediums, consulting with familiar spirits. This is where you go into some sort of a trance and then you are supposedly channeled by some other sort of spirit that speaks through you. In 1 Samuel chapter 28, there is a visiting of King Saul to the witch of Endor, and literally the word there should have been translated instead of witch, medium of Endor. That's what the original word means and is translated in other places. So he couldn't contact God because he had so left God's presence. So again, he literally was looking for light in darkness. And this idea of going to somebody with some sort of crystal ball or using some sort of Ouija board to try to communicate with other people and pass messages is all a part of this supposed hidden knowledge. Again, in the New Age movement, this is referred to as channeling. Thought it was interesting that years ago, Hillary Clinton said that she had somehow or other channeled and got in contact with Eleanor Roosevelt. She later backpedaled and used some different language, but that kind of thing is very popular with people wanting to some sort of connect with important people from the past. A wizard or spiritist is sometimes referred to as a trumpet medium, and this has to do with the idea of levitating or you're having some sort of seance and suddenly the table begins to lift as an indication that you have somehow or other moved this physical object through this spirit guide. And again, the movies have popularized these things a lot. And as I mentioned, a necromancer is someone who calls up the dead. One of the most famous occult members that I know you've all heard of is Houdini. And he was involved in all these special escape tricks. And he told his wife that I'm going to pull the greatest escape that the world has ever seen. I'm going to come back from the Hadean realm. And he said, I want you to hold seances and communicate with me, and I'm going to communicate with you from Hades. And his widow did that for over 20 years, gathered a bunch of occultists together every year on the anniversary of his death, until finally, after 20 years, she gave up. These are all different types of occult worship, and they all recognize what I just simply would refer to as the dark night of the soul. And there's a place in Florida called Casa Diga, Florida. It literally means the city of the dead. It's 20 miles from Disneyland, and it's spookier than the haunted house. They have four spiritualist churches in a town of only 400 people. And it is one of the centers, at least in the state of Florida, for occult worship. I want to close with this prophecy of Isaiah, as in that day Isaiah was prophesying to the people, some of which were turning away from Jehovah and consulting mediums and spiritists who whisper and mutter. Should you not consult your own God? Should they consult the dead on behalf of the living? Instead, he says, go to the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it is because they have no dawn, no light in them. He goes on to say that ultimately they will find nothing in following the occult but distress and darkness and fearful gloom, and they will be thrust ultimately into outer darkness. So very strong warnings about this, and very, very common. And it's found so many places in our culture. In the 70s, Led Zeppelin was one of the most popular groups, and the most popular song of the 1970s decade was The Stairway to Heaven. And The Stairway to Heaven is really a beautiful song with interesting lyrics and kind of very different than what you might think of in regards to any kind of heavy metal. Very pleasant to listen to, but it's very deceiving. Because this is Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and here's a section of The Stairway to Heaven. Yes, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. And it makes me wonder, this is cited in Lewis Spence's book, Magic Arts in Celtic Britain. Turns out these guys were dabbling in the occult, and if you look carefully at the lyrics and at what they were doing and promoting, it was not a stairway to heaven, but a highway to hell. And you can change the path you're on. You can go back to this other path and join us in this occult experiment if you're just willing. It makes me wonder. I had no idea that this beautiful song, The Stairway to Heaven, was actually promoting things that are involved in the occult. So, again, I agree with Shakespeare. The fault is not in the stars, but in us. To the law and the testimony, as Isaiah says, we need to put our faith in God and not in the New Age movement or all of these things that I mentioned tonight that Moses so clearly delineated for us 3,400 years ago. All right, you've listened well. Thank you very much. And we'll have some opportunity to talk more about some of these things later. If there's anybody who's subject to the law and the testimony and would like to come forward, once you come, together we stand and we sing.